Then you've got this other word obsession where somebody is just fixated on something. You like to collect Star Trek stuff. I like to collect vintage Hollywood and space stuff too. So you and I have that in common, but we're not obsessed with those things. They don't create distress for us
Speak for
in
yourself, man.
This podcast is for general informational purposes only and represents the individual opinions of Dr. Dimitri Bick and his guests. It does not constitute the practice of medicine or other professional healthcare services and should not be taken as medical advice or an establishment of standard of care. No guarantee is given regarding the accuracy of any statements and no doctor-patient relationship is formed. The content on this podcast is not intended to be a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Please consult your healthcare professional for any medical questions.
Hey, everybody, and welcome to the Psych Effect Podcast. I'm your host, Dimitri Bick. I had two healthcare horror stats of the day today, or stats of the week today. One wasn't a stat, it was a story, but I'm going to shelve those and do them on a different show because sports news broke out this week with local teams, and I just want to do a sports show to start this one, this show, because I haven't done a sports show in a while. And I've got a huge mental health show coming up with Dr. Tahir Rahman on extreme overvalued beliefs and delusions coming up in about 5 or 6 minutes. So I just want to do a sports show. Anyway, this week, the Dolphins signed Odell Beckham Jr. The Marlins traded Luis Arraez. The Heat got eliminated. And the Panthers made it to the second round of the playoffs. And the Bruins are about to blow another 3-1 lead. And I wanted to talk about all those things, so specifically down here, the sports franchises and the way they go in different directions. You know, the Marlins traded Luis Arraez today, and it's really sad to see this franchise be passed from owner to owner, and not one of them seems to really give a crap about this franchise. And I don't know what it is. You know, Wayne Huizenga, when he started the franchise in 92, seemed to care the most. He bought himself a World Series in 97 by signing all of these big name free agents. They won in 97, but he always wanted a new stadium, which he could never get. And then he sold off all of the assets the year after they won a World Series. And because he didn't want to pay, saying he was losing all this money when they were still playing it at the old Dolphin Stadium in Miami Gardens. And then he sold to Jeff Loria, who came in and is like, well, this team doesn't make any money. I'm not going to field a winning team. But they ended up winning a World Series anyway with a bunch of really young, good players. And then he sold off the team because he didn't want to pay anyone, claiming poverty, thinking that they could just do it again. And when they got all these prospects coming up and they were pretty good, they would just sell off pieces and claim poverty. And then he sold the team to this guy, Bruce Sherman, and they're basically doing the same thing. But they're not winning. They've never won anything. And everyone comes down here thinking they can be the Tampa Bay Rays, but Tampa is actually really smart and can do that. And it's really sad because they got their stadium and they're still not spending any money. And they're claiming it's the fans' fault for not showing up. But fans are not going to show up to a team that betrays them all the time by selling off their assets. And I'm going to bring you an example of the Florida Panthers. The team was founded by Wayne Huizenga in 92. They were instantly good, essentially. They went to the finals the same year the Marlins won the World Series in 96, 97. And then they were terrible, just awful, for just 20 years, just awful. Finally, and everyone said that nobody showed up to the arena. They got an arena in Sunrise, and nobody showed up. And the popular statement with all the NHL fans around the league is that the Panthers have like 6 fans. That's the meme. And, you know, like, why would you follow a team that stinks and doesn't want to win? But then the Cohen's bought the team and they started dedicating themselves to winning. They brought in Dale Talon and then recently Bill Zito from Columbus, and they started compiling pieces. And over the last 5 or 6 years, all they do is win. And what happens is the fans showed up, and they've always supported the team. They just showed up in the arena. So what comes first, the chicken or the egg, the fans or the team? And that's the excuse the Marlins are using, is nobody shows up. Well, nobody shows up to see a minor league team in a major league stadium. If you actually gave them a reason to show up, maybe they would. And I think Miami, being an event town, is that way. We've been spoiled by the Heat, who have been good since basically 1994, when Pat Riley showed up. They've been good for 30 years. I think they've had one losing or two losing seasons since then. And they just compile pieces. The common saying here, they used to say it about the Miami Hurricanes, is they don't rebuild, they reload. And that's just what they do. And we've been spoiled by that. The Dolphins have been terrible for years and years. They're finally getting good again. But the Dolphins have always been this town's favorite team until they were terrible for a while and the Heat took over. But when the Dolphins are good, this place is always a football town and they will always take over. And you see now recently, when the Dolphins have come back and been good again, that what do? The mentality is, don't rest on your laurels, right? Last year, the year before, they made the playoffs, they weren't good enough. They went and they added pieces. Last year, they made the playoffs, they blew a division lead. They got blown out in Kansas City. What did they do? They added another receiver. They added two edge rusher rookies in the draft that are super fast. I don't think that they're done yet because they still have cap space. They're adding pieces that you don't think they need. Why do they need Odell Beckham Jr.? They have a ridiculous offense. They just added another ridiculous piece. They keep adding things. The Marlins, what do? They just sell that. They just sell pieces off. They don't care. And it's really, really annoying, this franchise. And it's not just one owner. It's just owner after owner that does this. And I'm sort of done with this franchise. And it's sad because I really love the Marlins and I love this team as a team. My kids love this team. And it's hard to explain to a 12 and a 9-year-old why they just sold off their best baseball player, their best hitter. You know, why'd they sell them off? Well, because the owner doesn't want to pay him. Well, what did they get in return? Well, they got a box of donuts, and not even good donuts. They didn't get a top 100 prospect. They got nobody. They got the donut at the bottom of the bottom of the shelf, the one that's just fried dough, no sprinkles, no chocolate, no glaze. They got nothing. Why? Why didn't you even get anything? The guy's won two batting titles in both leagues. You got nothing for him? Just giving players away now? Like, it's just ridiculous. I'm so over this franchise. Bruce Sherman can go eat a, well, you know what. Anyway, that's my sports rant for this week. I got Tahir Rahman coming up on Extreme Overvalued Beliefs next.
Welcome to the Bar Banter Podcast. I'm Travis Jennings, and along with my three hilarious friends, we debate and solve the questions that no one dares to ask. Questions like, what is the best Starburst flavor? Does the person in the middle seat get both armrests? And which Muppet would make the best assassin? If you're looking for a podcast that will make you laugh hysterically or scream in your car with rage, we have the show you didn't know you were irrationally passionate about. Join us for new episodes every Wednesday wherever you get your podcasts, and follow us on the socials at @_barbanter. And remember, this is our podcast, and you're just along for the ride.
My guest today is Tahir Rahman. He is a professor of psychiatry at Washington University School of Medicine. He earned his MD at the University of Kansas and did his psychiatry residency at Johns Hopkins University. He's published multiple articles in the American Journal of Psychiatry, the Journal of American Academy of Psychiatry and the Law, the American Medical Association Journal of Ethics. Some of those articles were on the topics we're here to discuss: delusions and extreme overvalued beliefs. And so let's just kind of get into it. Let's start with the history of the term delusion from Jaspers, I guess, would be the beginning of this term, all the way through the current definition in the DSM, and also the term overvalued ideas, I guess, what started with Wernicke, and we'll go from there.
Yes, thank you for having me on your show. Really, really excited to be here and to talk about a really important topic in psychiatry and in forensic psychiatry, for that matter. You know, you will hear people use these terms like delusion or obsession very loosely and interchangeably in society. For example, if somebody's got a lot of guns, they'll say, "This guy was obsessed with guns." Or if they're into anti-government stuff, they'll say, "This guy is deluded or delusional about the government." And the point that we're trying to make here at WashU is that these words have meaning and concise definitions. And we can't just loosely and interchangeably throw these out there, especially when we're doing a forensic evaluation, which have legal and other implications for things like the insanity defense, for death penalty mitigation. And so I think it's important for us to step back and say, what is a delusion in psychiatry and what is an obsession? And then there's this new concept that I want to talk about called extreme overvalued belief, which is really an old concept that we've resurrected from 100 years ago to bring to today. So a delusion is a false belief based on incorrect inference about external reality that is firmly held despite what almost everyone else believes, and despite what constitutes incontrovertible and obvious proof or evidence to the contrary. The belief is not accepted by others in a person's culture or subculture, so it's not an article of faith. So an example of that, you know, quite simply for psychiatrists, is if an individual believes that there's aliens invading the earth and that their body is now an alien being, or that their neighbor is an alien being and that they need to kill them in order to save planet Earth, that would be an example, a real simple example of what a delusion might be. And they usually are suffering from a psychotic mental illness like schizophrenia. Although delusions can be seen in a wide variety of other neurological and psychiatric disorders. People with dementia can get delusions. Delirious people can get delusions. People with certain mood disorders that get extremely depressed or manic can develop delusions. So we'll see these in a variety of psychiatric disorders, but they're important to note as being a core symptom of a psychotic mental illness in most cases, especially in the forensic arena. Then we have obsession, which is a very different kind of experience for patients. And usually we see these in the outpatient clinic, but sometimes we'll see hospitalized patients have obsessions too. And these are recurrent, persistent thoughts, urges, or images that are experienced at some time as intrusive and unwanted that causes anxiety or distress. And the person tries to fight these thoughts or ignore them or suppress them or neutralize them. And the classic example is somebody who thinks that there's germs all around them and that they need to continue washing their hands 40, 50, 100 times a day. They can develop lesions on their hands from washing too many times a day. But the other kinds of thoughts that obsessive people will sometimes get can be of harming self or others. There can be religious thoughts, impurities, things like that. And those, again, are unwanted, distressing, and an anxiety type of situation. And we think that most of these individuals are not at increased risk for violence. So although a person may feel an urge to do something that's harmful to others, for the most part, this is a it would be rare for them to actually act on those thoughts. Then the third thing that my book is the topic of is extreme overvalued beliefs. And I'm just going to put this out, real simple concept, that it's a belief shared by others in a person's culture, religion, or subcultural group. It's often relished, amplified, and defended by the possessor of the belief. And we're saying that it's different from a delusion or obsession. The belief grows more dominant over time, more refined, more resistant to challenge. And there's an intense emotional commitment to the belief that the person has, and that they may carry out violent behavior in its service. And a great, you know, easy example of that would be what happened on the September 11 attacks, or more recently with the U.S. Capitol attack. And there you saw a mob of people attack the Capitol, and they were saying things like, Trump won the election, and the election was stolen, Biden is a communist, hang Mike Pence. And these calls for violence, building a gallows in front of the U.S. Capitol. It was a very chilling day in American history. So these are examples of what extreme overvalued beliefs can look like. And so just to recap, a delusion is fixed false belief usually associated with a psychotic mental illness like schizophrenia or other major severe mental illness. An obsession is intrusive, unwanted. It's a type of anxiety symptom, probably has a rare or low incidence of violence associated with it. And then an extreme overvalued belief, which is probably much more common in the world, is one that's a belief that's shared by other people in their culture, their religion, their subcultural group, and held with an intense emotional commitment. And so these are what we're saying are concise definitions that not only psychiatry should embrace, but particularly forensic psychiatrists involved with doing things like threat assessment, prevention of violence, targeted violence in particular. And the legal system can benefit from learning about these three entities. And so that's kind of a good place to start, maybe. And the history of it, Dimitri, that you kind of alluded to in your introduction, is that Carl Wernicke, and we know who Carl Wernicke is from, those of us in medicine know that he described sensory aphasias from having a stroke that affects that part of the brain. And Wernicke also is honored by having his name mentioned in Wernicke-Korsakoff syndrome, which is used to describe alcoholic dementias from the thiamine deficiency. So those are two Wernicke contributions that most doctors are familiar with. And this third one really was written in 1892 in an article where Wernicke first described it. And it's also mentioned in one of his books called The Grundriss of Psychiatry, which means the outline of psychiatry. That was in the early 1900s. And so this material has sort of been lost to American psychiatry for really unclear, unknown reasons, although several major centers in the U.S., including Johns Hopkins, Harvard Medical School, and WashU here in St. Louis, where I'm at, have embraced these three sort of traditions in psychiatry for a long time now and have applied it to different disorders, eating disorders being the big one, as being an overvalued idea, for instance.
Jasper's also talked about overvalued ideas too, at the time.
That's right.
And right now, psychiatry uses delusion in their definition. They have also a cultural exception, which is what extreme overvalued ideas has as part of their delusions. But right now, psychiatry has a definition of delusion. They have a definition of obsession. They, as of right now, don't have extreme overvalued beliefs in the DSM. So what I'm gathering is you're advocating for including that in the next version of the DSM.
I think it would be important for it to be part of threat assessment in the DSM. I don't think we can just throw this out there as a clinical thing. We don't want to pathologize any person's religion culture, subculture as being a psychiatric disorder. So that would just make no sense. And that's part of free speech, especially in the Western, democratic world. We want free speech to be something that no one should feel suppressed. And so I think it's very important that this day in the forensic arena and threat assessment professionals can use this definition, and legal professionals can use this after an act of violence has occurred, for instance, because it'll be a debate. And this debate happened, for instance, after John Hinckley Jr. was arrested for his attempted assassination of President Ronald Reagan. And there was this eruption back then, and backlash against psychiatry for saying this man had delusions and erotomanic delusions, which there's pretty general agreement now that's not really erotomania. And an argument could be made that he may have had extreme overvalued beliefs. But the jury decided in his favor, and we have to accept that. And I think that it's something for us to consider. So in legal matters, and if the legal system wants to use psychotic mental disorder as sort of the threshold of a severe mental illness, which is what it usually requires for that insanity defense to work in most jurisdictions, then we need to understand what a delusion is. And then the other place is threat assessment. So we may have an individual who has an extreme overvalued belief. Perhaps he believes that the government in the United States is overreaching, and they refuse to pay taxes, for instance. Sovereign citizens in the United States have been known to espouse these kinds of beliefs. And what you'll see is danger towards law enforcement, towards government officials. And that threat assessment requires careful and professional instruments to measure their potential threat to as a targeted violent assessment.
Have you gotten any particular feedback from the APA or anyone that is in the groups that write the DSM about this concept?
A great question. I think that the first step is that we need to make people aware of the fact that this definition, these concise definitions, are being created and are out there. And I think that just hasn't. I'm hoping that this podcast and others like it will get that message out there, because when people hear about the three concise definitions, particularly psychiatrists, mental health specialists, they really want to embrace them and do tend to agree that this has a place somewhere in threat assessment, in prevention of targeted violence, school shootings. And I'm going to go out on a limb and say we can end school shootings by the end of the decade by utilizing concise definitions and using preventive tools in our schools. And so not only this isn't just a philosophical debate about what is a delusion, an extreme overvalued belief, and obsession, but it's also a way of getting us to ending some of the targeted attacks we're seeing in society, particularly with our school kids.
Wow, that's a pretty bold statement that you think that school shootings can end based on threat assessment. Okay. I'm glad you brought up the philosophical debate about this, because I do want to get a little bit into that, because I believe that this is sort of a philosophical debate. Sorry,
It
excuse
can
me.
be. Let me touch on a little bit about why I think school
Okay.
shootings can end real quick, just because I know that
Okay, go
sounds delusional, right, Dimitri?
ahead. Well, or maybe an extreme overvalued belief.
Yeah,
Yeah, okay.
exactly. So out there, in the world, people, when they think of what is a mental illness, they're imagining some guy who's drooling and has incoherent speech and is nuts, right? That's the layperson's vision of what a mentally ill person is. Then, you've got this other word obsession where somebody is just fixated on something. You like to collect Star Trek stuff. I like to collect vintage Hollywood and space stuff too. So you and I have that in common, but we're not obsessed mm-hmm. with those things. They don't create distress for us.
Yeah, speak for yourself, man.
We enjoy them and right. relish them, and we defend our, you know, desire to want more of them. And so that's really starts getting into a different type of belief system than a delusion or obsession. So if you're a school teacher and you in your class have a kid who is really fixated on other school shooters, maybe developing a spreadsheet like Adam Lanza did, although he did his secretly. Nobody knew he was developing and compiling a spreadsheet of mass murderers in his home, on his home computer. Adam Lanza is the Sandy Hook shooter, if you don't remember. But he's the one who he actually ranked in order like 400 mass shooters, and he ranked them by the body count, how many people died. And so if we have a better understanding of what is a person who has an extreme overvalued belief, then we're going to be able to detect that better. Let's say that a person is at home, they're a parent, and they have a child who's, you know, starting to get fixated on school shooters, mass shootings. In the case of Adam Lanza, he also had misanthropic beliefs. He thought that he had a scorn for humanity. He thought humans were bad. And when parents, teachers, school counselors, safety people see these kinds of overvalued beliefs, that's a red flag for needing a threat assessment. And so,
okay, but let me ask, because yeah. he did that spreadsheet in private and no one knew about it, how would you find that out?
His mother could have known some of these things and brought them to the attention of mental health workers. He was seen and treated by psychiatrists, and he was known to have some odd beliefs, and he had some autism spectrum things that were diagnosed. He actually had some obsessions too, cleanliness and germs. He didn't like being touched by other people, so that he had some oddities. But if somebody's relishing and enjoying something, they're not going to come to the psychiatrist's office and say, you know, doctor, I enjoy this material and
True.
I'm fascinated by it, I'm fixated on it.
And they also have the right to refuse, right? So even if his mom noticed these obsessions, or she noticed the spreadsheet, for instance, and they're
right.
like,
right,
you know, I think you should see a psychiatrist, he has the right to say no.
He has the right to say no. And then threat assessment people have a right to search his items.
Do they, though?
Well, it depends on exactly what the facts are. But yes, getting a search warrant might be a difficult hurdle to overcome. And then there's the weapons thing. You know, should he have access to, you know, a Bushmaster and all these other weapons?
In Florida, teenagers now have the right to have guns.
That's right. So,
you know,
if the parent sees, hey, my kid's fixated on some of these things, and maybe brings it to the attention of a mental health worker or a school counselor, we can make a recommendation, you know, don't have your child involved with guns. And we saw a case recently where the parents were actually prosecuted for that. We saw that prosecuted for failing to act on the case up in Parkland, the Highland Park shooter. I don't know if you're familiar with that.
Yeah, I live an hour from Parkland.
Oh, wow. Okay. Yeah. So not Parkland, Florida, Parkland, Highland Park in Chicago, where there was the 4th of July shooting a few years back. Cremo was his name. And his parents were prosecuted for failing to act to protect others when they knew that their son was having such volatile
Okay.
Such volatility.
That makes sense because I don't see that happening in Florida. In Florida, you have the right to have a gun, and nobody has the right to take that away from you.
Right.
In fact, they're expanding that right here.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah. There was a bill, I don't know if it passed or not, to expand that right below 18 or below 20, I think it was. I
Yeah.
have to look it up. I don't know if that's factual. I have to look
This
that up.
isn't, and what I'm trying to do is not a this isn't a discourse about whether people should have guns or not. I think
Right.
that's to be determined by society. And for the most part, I live in the Midwest. I'm from Kansas. People have access to guns. Nobody wants them banned or taken away. I think it makes sense for us to put guns into categories, for instance, and perhaps do something there. That's speculation on my part about whether people would accept that or not. But some guns are have much higher lethality potential than others, and should be,
Right.
and shouldn't necessarily be banned. I'm not necessarily in favor of that, but they should be harder to access. And so, doing a more extensive background check on somebody who wants a gun that's usually used as a weapon of war would probably be in society's best interest than if they just want to buy a shotgun or a handgun or something like that, just because you can kill so many more people.
Right. And again, this isn't a podcast on guns, although we could probably do that too.
Inevitably, yeah. So whenever these shootings, and Dimitri, this is why I think what I'm talking about, I hope people see the importance of it, is that whenever there's one of these mass shootings or school shootings, the first thing media go to, the left wants to talk about guns, and the right wants to talk about, well, that's mental illness doing that. And what I'm trying to do is put this into some perspective for people to understand. You know, guns don't make people do these things, first of all. So, you know, what is the motive then? And for the most part, mental health experts have been saying all along that these are not caused by a severe mental illness like psychosis and schizophrenia. And when you go out there and talk to lay people, they don't get that. They still think, you know, that personalities and other aspects of a person's mental life are part of this mental illness word that we use so loosely. So when society, when pop culture people talk about, well, he's mentally ill, a lot of times they're talking about, you know, fixations on things that are not in this realm of a psychotic mental illness that you could treat with Haldol or an antipsychotic drug. It's not even in that realm at all. This is more along the lines of people with, for whatever reason, develop a fixation. Some of it may even be due to cognitive illusions, you know, reading something online that makes them jump to a conclusion and then go further into a belief system that's completely false. And
Okay, well, I'm glad you brought that up because this is where the discussion that I kind of wanted to take this because this is sort of the crux of this, I don't know if you want to call it the sort of a debate between the extreme overvalued beliefs versus delusions versus the overvalued ideas. I feel like there's a philosophical issue here with the way we've defined these terms over the course of the 100 years or so that they came to be from Jaspers.
right.
Okay. Jaspers saw mental illness because that's what he was exposed to. He created the term delusions because he saw schizophrenics. And so he saw delusions in the context of mental illness. So he said, well, delusions are people that are mentally ill. And therefore we have this concept of delusions with only conceived as something associated with schizophrenia. Therefore they're a psychotic phenomenon. And what I'm trying to get to here is I think what I think we need to do as a field is we should reconceptualize delusion as an abnormal perception about reality that doesn't necessarily have to be something pathological, but that is associated with behavior. So in other words, Jaspers used delusion as a term to describe a phenomenon of false belief that occurred during schizophrenia. But whatever you want to call that phenomenon, I believe it can occur outside of schizophrenia, okay? But we've latched onto this term of delusion only within a pathological sense. But what if we looked at it as a phenomenon of false belief, not necessarily associated with pathology? In other words, people can be delusional, but not psychotic, right?
You're asking an important thing. It requires the examiner to exert their own judgment on the case. So let me give you an example. A patient is brought to me, maybe they're in their later life, in their 70s, and the family says, you know, mom here or grandma here thinks that our grandfather, her husband, is having an affair. And that could be true, first of all. And so as you start getting into the case, you realize that all of the family think that she's wrong and that she has a delusion and that it's a fixed belief, it's false. Then you do your cognitive exam and realize that her MOC, her mini mental scores, are low and that she's also had some memory loss issues in the last 6 months to a year. And you start heading towards a diagnosis of a dementia with some delusional disorder, delusional content in it. And that kind of highlights that the examiner is exerting their own judgment on the case. And that's very different to me than somebody who believes that the election was stolen or that the West is at war with Islam and that's a reason to go into jihadism, violent jihadism. So those are two very different kinds of cases. And also it does not necessarily have to be false. It just has to be sometimes difficult to prove for it to be an extreme overvalued belief. For instance, if a person believes that the CIA killed John F. Kennedy, which millions of people believe that, by the way, because Oliver Stone made a movie saying that. And although that's been disproven by many experts who say that's just not true. So is that a delusion or is it an overvalued belief? And especially if somebody carries out violent behavior in the as a motive for that belief. So we have to have a description for that, right? It doesn't mean that they need antipsychotic drugs, for instance. And as long as I've been practicing, I've never seen a psychiatrist call something a delusion that they didn't think could benefit from psychotropic drugs or involuntary civil commitment or insanity defense, you know, along those lines. Most of the time, this word delusion is a pretty heavy duty term in psychiatry for a psychotic illness. And if we stretch that out into, you know, the 9/11 attackers being delusional and the January 6ers being delusional, if we start doing that, I think it loses its meaning and it makes it harder. Also, to the person who believes it and the millions of other people who might share that belief with them, if we say that they have a delusion, it's simply because it's a different belief than you have. And that doesn't make sense either. So okay. So the bottom line is, Dimitri, you can split hairs on this stuff all day long. And there actually is no way to separate delusional from non-delusional thinking. It's an epistemological debate and dilemma.
Well, let me address that. Because you got into a lot of different things here. And there's many layers to all of those things that you mentioned. Yes. Right. So
peel back the onion.
There's a lot of layers to those things because you brought in, for instance, like the West is at war with Islam and the grandmother who believes that someone's cheating on her. And then you brought in the cultural exception. So yes. There's three different things in there.
Right.
So for instance, the grandmother, what I would say is the statement itself okay, my wife is cheating on me, my husband is cheating on me. Maybe delusion. But the statement itself is not necessarily a delusion. It's the reasoning behind it that makes it delusional or not, right? In the same way, the West is at war with Islam doesn't necessarily, it's too broad of a statement. Because yes, people believe in it, but other people believe it. But the reason behind it matters, right? Just a simple statement like that is not enough. You have to ask them, why do you believe that? Because the burden of proof for reality is on the person that makes the statement, okay? And this is going to go on to the third part you mentioned, which is the cultural exception, which is the biggest issue I have with all of these things, okay? The burden of proof for someone that makes a statement is on the person that makes the statement. So when grandma says, my wife is cheating, or grandma says, my husband is cheating on me, what I would say to grandma is, well, why do you believe that? And if grandma says, well, I caught him with another woman. I saw that woman. Well, now we're into hallucinations, right? And clearly we're into delusional phenomenon because now maybe she's hallucinating and we're, you know, now we're doing tests and Amoka and we're going to both agree as, and more, most forensic examiners and doctors are going to agree that that is a secondary product of some psychotic phenomenon of hallucinations.
Right. But I'll just point out real quick that you've put the, weight on those beliefs just simply by being the examiner, that you're placing judgment on it as a doctor, that's now a delusion.
But anybody can do that, right? Her children can ask her that question. The point of it is the burden of proof for the statement is on the person making the statement. So she could say that to her daughter and her daughter can say, grandma, why do you believe that? And grandma can say, I saw him with another woman. It's irrelevant who's the questioner.
Right. But when you're saying burden of proof, you're saying that sort of in a generic term. In court, her statement would still require interpretation by the psychiatrist as that's a delusional belief.
Okay. Well, let's put court away for now.
That's why we have to have this. What you're saying is exactly the reason why we need the three definitions.
Okay, I'm going to get to the court part right, in a second, because right. I have a proposed definition of delusion that I want to get to, because I will have an answer for the court part. I will have an answer for that, I promise.
Okay.
Because I've thought that through. As a forensic doctor, I've thought all that through.
Yeah.
Okay, and then so. The wars at West with Islam is a too broad of a term. If I had that person in front of me, I would say, well, why do you believe that? Well, if I were to get an answer such as, well, because the United States government hates Allah and only bombs the Middle East. Well, clearly that is factually untrue. And therefore it is not real. And therefore, I guess I would classify that as a delusion because it is counter to factual reality. Okay. So the reasoning behind it is what's important. It's not the statement itself, right? And so getting to the cultural exception, and this is the most important part to me about all of our definitions, all of them, whether it's an extreme overvalued belief, whether it's a delusion or an overvalued idea. The cultural exception is an enormous problem for us as psychiatrists. Because what we do here is, whether we like it or not, scientists, and I'm going to classify us as scientists, much to the chagrin probably of a lot of lay people, I think, we are the arbiters of reality, physicists, chemists, biologists. And when we start to create a subjective reality, in other words, it is real because you agree with me. It is real because a group of people agree with me. What we do is we hand over reality to other people. And what that means, what that creates is a system where I wanted to play something for you, actually, if that's okay. This kind of illustrates my point. Because this is a podcast and I'm supposed to be entertaining, I sort of just want to play this for you if it's okay. This is a clip from a movie. Have you ever seen In the Mouth of Madness?
I can't say that I have, no.
Okay, so it's a Stephen King adaptation. Basically, these two individuals go to find a writer who disappeared, and they're having this debate about reality in a car.
Okay.
And this is going to illustrate my point.
What's to be scared about it? It's not like it's real or anything.
Well, it's not real from your point of view, and right now reality shares your point of view. What scares me about Kane's work is what might happen if reality shared his point of view.
Whoa, we're not talking about reality here. We're talking about fiction. It's different, you know?
A reality is just what we tell each other it is. Sane and insane could easily switch places if the insane were to become the majority. You would find yourself locked in a padded cell, wondering what happened to the world.
I mean, it wouldn't happen to me.
Well, it would if you realized everything you ever knew was gone. I'd be pretty lonely being the last one left.
Okay. So the point of that is, and my point about the cultural exception is that if you allow others to define reality, then real becomes whatever people believe it is. Okay. And you may say, well, okay, that's fine because the majority believes reality is objective and, you know, scientists put out science and research and physicists give us quantum mechanics and all this. And that's okay. But it's not about what the majority believes. It's about who's in control of the information and who's in control of reality, right? And when the people that believe what they want and believe the things that aren't real get in control of things like government start, then reality becomes what they want it to be. And the biggest example of this, and I don't know if I'm going to get canceled for this or anything, but is the Holocaust.
Yeah.
And what happens is,
you're right, Dimitri.
You know, you get a guy who goes in and says, Jews are the problem with your life. A very clear, what you would call an extreme overvalued belief and what I would call a delusion. Okay. Because it's patently false. Okay. And he gets in control. Right. And so he changes reality for an entire country. Right. And that's the problem. Okay. But if we were to call it something different.
But you would agree, right, that it's not based on a severe mental illness.
Okay, right. So here's the crux of the argument, right? Why does cultural exceptions matter, right?
Right.
What makes something psychotic? Is it the belief itself or is it the behavior associated with the belief? So you would say, based on my definition, then all of the January 6th actors, right, would be psychotic, right, based on
right.
what I would say, right?
Right, right.
And I'm going to say no, because what I would say is behavior is what defines mental illness. The DSM has 167 mentions of the term social occupational or some other form of I forgot the exact terminology, but it's socio-occupational or other important areas of functioning,
yeah.
right?
Yeah.
In every single definition of mental illness.
Right.
So if we eliminated all other definitions, just left delusion, let's just say that we use my terminology, right?
Yeah.
People could have these weird beliefs, which you would call extreme overvalued beliefs, what I would call delusion, but they would not be mentally ill because they would not have the behavior associated with it, right? So they could believe, you know, weird things, you know, the government is illegitimate or I'm being persecuted by the government or the West is at war with Islam, but they're not behaving in a way that would cause you to feel that they have, that they're not behaving in a way that is significantly affecting their socio-occupational or other important areas of functioning. They're going to work. They're taking care of their family. But you know what? Once in a while, when you get them in a political debate, they're weird, right? They're just weird people, right? They say weird things. But what I would say is, if you go and shoot up a school, you start to look at mental illness differently. The belief itself doesn't make you mentally ill, but is there another behavior associated with that, right? So were they not sleeping? Were they grandiose? I would say that the guy in Norway, Breivik, right? He may not be schizophrenic, and I agree with that, but he had grandiose ideas, right?
Sure.
He wrote a manifesto. That's very much increased activity, right? I don't know. I didn't see the report. I think you might have seen the report. Did he have racing thoughts? Maybe he was bipolar. You know what I mean? Like, the idea itself, the belief itself doesn't necessarily make you mentally ill, but there may be associated symptoms that belief is associated with that may be the mental illness. So what I'm saying is that the term extreme overvalue beliefs, because of the cultural exception, it creates the system of allowing a way for dangerousness to get into our culture. And I think if we eliminated that, we would be a lot safer.
Well, I'll start by saying that Breivik did not have manic depression or bipolar disorder. And he has been detained for a number of years now, over a decade. And he has not exhibited anything that looks like schizophrenia or bipolar illness or you know, needing antipsychotic drugs, for instance. So he's, lots of time has passed. Another great example is Timothy McVeigh, who he and Terry Nichols blew up the Oklahoma City building in the 90s. And that was another example of an extreme overvalued belief, where he believed that he was going to be the another American Revolution was going to take place, and he was
right.
A hero for that second American Revolution. So there are belief systems like this, and I'll also tell you that scientists can develop extreme overvalued beliefs, and the great example of that is the eugenics movement, where doctors pretty much told society that anybody with a low intellectual functioning, alcoholism, should be sterilized because their genes would be transferred to the next generation and create, you know, a race of imbeciles, basically. So that was completely wrong. And the example you bring up with the Holocaust, the Nazis clung, you know, they did cling to some of these beliefs brought by American psychiatrists in that 1920s, and some of that, quote, research, which is not really valid research. They brought that to their society to say that, you know, gypsies and alcoholics and psychotic people should be exterminated due to contamination of the rest of the population. And then they brought along Jews and other minorities into their equation, which was really just a horrific part of history. And so I'm glad you brought that up. But the main reason is, if we have this sort of delusion exception for people, if it's part of their culture or subculture, I think that it makes it difficult for the public to understand, threat assessment professionals to understand, and the legal system to understand, if we use that term loosely. And I don't think that delusion should really be used to describe somebody's passionate fixation on something, because those are really positive emotions. And a lot of the people who really have schizophrenia and are delusional have a lot of fear, you know, for example, persecutory delusions, religious delusions, you know, that, for instance, Andrea Yates, who drowned her children in a bathtub after developing a psychotic mental illness, believe that if her children died before the age of accountability, that the you know, their souls would go to heaven. You know, that kind of very odd idiosyncratic thinking is what I think a delusion should really remain as. And it does get difficult at some level to divide subcultural beliefs from others. So if, for instance, in the Islamic jihadism example, a person believes the West is at war with Islam, then they may also ascribe to another belief that it's the duty of every Muslim to kill somebody who's a non-believer. And that then is a different kind of shared belief, because mainstream Muslims don't believe that. But people who believe in what ISIS, Hamas, or Al-Qaeda, those individuals may think that that statement is true. So that's part of their subculture. So now we not only do we have this broad culture of mainstream Islam, which is very much a peace-loving religion, then you have this subculture that wants to weaponize religious edicts and create their own perverted form of Islam. So then we have that. And you can see this with abortion, for instance. You have people who are pro-choice, you have people that are opposing abortion, and some of them will ascribe their religious beliefs or ideology to it. And there was a case in Wichita, Kansas, where Dr. Tiller was shot at point blank in church by an anti-abortion activist who literally believed he was saving babies by performing this act, and that he had somehow saved thousands of future babies also by eliminating this abortion doctor, and that somehow that would lead to his salvation, in God's eyes. And by the way, he was really secretly, I'm sure, seen as a hero by many anti-abortion activists who shared that ideology and were happy to see this abortion doctor eliminated, although they might not publicly share that. They secretly do like it. So that makes this a very important distinction in my view, that if we have the term for the shared beliefs, we can use that again to alert the society about it, our society about it, to do threat assessment with it. If you see something, say something. If a woman has a boyfriend who's arming himself for an insurrection, and by the way, there were some January 6 people's attacks who were thwarted because a family member got worried about them doing that. And as we educate people about how shared ideologies, and in the absence of other psychotic or mood symptoms, could develop into a violent extremist, if we teach people what that is, we may also be able to keep people from adopting those beliefs themselves. And I'll give you a quick little example. We've all seen Rubin's Cube. That's a Rubin's vase. It's a shape of a vase, and then there's two faces on each side. It's an optical illusion. And if you look at it carefully, you'll see two faces looking at each other, or you'll see one vase in the middle. It's an optical illusion. And kids like to use those. And when children see one of those images, but they don't see the other one in the puzzle, they get a little frustrated. They're like, no, that's a vase. There is no face. And teachers love showing those puzzles to kids because they'll argue about it. Then the light bulb turns on and they're like, oh, now I see the two faces looking at one another, because their brain has now connected dots differently. And that's an example of an illusion. Well, cognitively, the same thing can happen with humans learning about something, particularly through social media, and they can become radicalized by seeing beliefs, images, and other transmitted propaganda that, for example, gender and the Buffalo shooter, that the United States is being taken over by blacks, the great replacement theory, and that no one's doing anything. Dylann Roof said, after when he went into the church there in North Carolina, I believe it was, or South Carolina, and shot members of the African American church there, he believed that somebody had to do something about the blacks taking over the country, the great replacement theory. And his attorneys, when they examined his case, said he essentially downloaded Google searches into his brain. And what may have been just an innocent search into what's happening with race in America turns into this hatred of black people, all the way to the point where he has this, what we call last resort warning behavior, where he needs to act now. And that brings up another topic about threat assessment, Dimitri, where researchers have now correlated proximal warning behaviors, distal characteristics in these protocols. And Dr. Reed Malloy, my friend and colleague in San Diego, has masterfully created the terrorism radicalization assessment protocol.
Yeah, the Trap 18, right?
The Trap 18. So these targeted attack correlates have now been researched, validated. This is now used in multiple countries, and threat assessment professionals use them. So we now know that some of these fixations, and you alluded to that, like, are they not sleeping? Are they not doing some of these things? So changes in thinking, emotion, other mental features like depression and
Right, because the behavior is what makes somebody psychotic, right? The behavior is the mental illness, it's not the belief. So if we eliminated the cultural exception, all of nothing would change.
But the thing that I would push back on you, Dimitri, there is that there are people with schizophrenia that never behave on their belief, but are still psychotic. And so a person.
Because of the other symptoms, because of the hallucinations, the disorganized behavior, the flat affect, right? Because of the associated symptoms of schizophrenia, the
Put another.
decrease in function over 6 months from previous behavior, that's what makes them schizophrenic. They may not act on the delusion, they may have the belief, but the other symptoms of schizophrenia are present.
Right, but the belief itself still is there as a delusion.
Exactly. Because the belief does not make you psychotic. It's the behavior. So you can have a belief, a weird, odd belief that's false,
So
and
on
be completely a
9/11,
normal human being.
on 9/11, when the hijackers flew airplanes into buildings in New York and in the Pentagon, are those behaviors what make it into mental illness then?
Great question. We're never going to know because they're dead. But let's extrapolate. That's true, right? From as a forensic examiner, we're never going to know because we can't evaluate them. But let's ex
But some members of their ilk have.
correct. Right. So let's extrapolate based on what we think they believe, right? They believe that a god, that a supernatural being exists that speaks to them through a book that was written by human beings hundreds of years ago. What's the whole belief system, right? That speaks to them through a book written by human beings,
Well,
that they're
let's say their subculture.
we're doing it from, like, we're doing the entire beliefs. We're not doing culture sub, we're doing the belief system, right? A supernatural being exists that speaks to them through a book written by human beings. It is the only one. There are no others. There's the only one that is the true one, okay? And all other ones that don't believe, all other people that don't believe in their version of that one are incorrect and deserve to die. Okay? That is the basis of their belief system. Now, because of that, if they murder other people in service of this supernatural being, they will be rewarded in a physical place where all great things will be given to them. Okay?
72
All
versions.
right. Well, I was going to bring that up, but you brought that up. Well, all great things will be given to them, including 72 versions. And they planned with another leader, they planned out over years to hijack airplanes and fly them into buildings to murder people to do that. Okay. Now, what we don't know is, were there any other other associated behaviors, hallucinations, sleep deprivation, racing thoughts. We don't know that. What we do know is,
But nobody thinks that they did.
but we don't, we, but we don't, we, nobody thinks that, but we don't know that. Okay. And we're not gonna base assumptions based on that. So we're gonna assume no. We're gonna assume no. But based on that system, that information I'm going to say is patently false because there's no way that that is true. That system is incorrect. That is a delusion, okay, by any stretch of the imagination. Now, are they mentally ill? Well, did they have social, occupational, and other important significant disruptions in social, occupational, other important areas of functioning? Well, let's explore that. they hid in a cave. Well, they hid in or in a cave. I guess they were with Osama in a house somewhere. They didn't have a job. They renounced their family. They basically murdered people. I would consider that a significant impairment in social, occupational, and other important areas of functioning. Now, what would you call that disorder? Well, I would call it a delusional disorder. Now, what subtype? I don't know. Is it persecutory type? I don't think it qualifies as that. I don't know that it qualifies as anything. Now, let's say they survive by some, let's just say magically they had a suit on and they survived and they were caught and arrested and they were put in front of us. Would we say that they were, would we put them in as NGRI? Now, that's a fantastic question. But we would have more information at that point, right? We would have other information about their behavior. So I can't answer that question. But I can, by my definitions, yes, I would say that they would have a delusional disorder because they have a delusion, because I'm taking the cultural exception away, right? And they have behaviors associated. Now, you're claiming, you would say that they have an extreme overvalued belief because you're including the cultural exception. But my point here is, if we take the cultural exception away, nothing changes. Nothing changes in the world. Everyone still has religion, and they're free to express religion any way they want. Everyone has the same rights that they do. And we do this every day, because when I was a resident, people would come into the emergency room, our psychiatric emergency room, and they would spout off about religion. And what did we do? We went to their pastor and we said, "Do you believe this?" And they go, "No, this is a little bit extreme." And what would we call it? Hyper-religiosity. And then we would classify them as bipolar or schizophrenic because they would have a delusion that's more than the culturally accepted. So nothing changed, right? But if we eliminated the cultural exception, right, and said that religion is delusional by my definition, they still have the right to practice their religion. But if they started acting bizarre and weird, not sleeping, talking really fast in church, they would still be brought in. And we would say, well, they have some other problem. Nothing would change. Nothing. Everything would be exactly the same. But what would happen is simplicity would take over. Okay, we wouldn't have all these terms. And what would happen is, I think from a psychiatric standpoint and from a PR standpoint, psychiatrists could go out in the world and say, everyone is free to believe whatever you want. It does not make you mentally ill. But these people that commit crimes, that commit mass murder, they have an extra problem. They have a behavioral problem. And we need to recognize them before they happen because of their behaviors. And we have these tools now to do that. But the belief system has a term, the singular term that we call delusion. And it's a simple thing. And a lot of us have it, and that's okay. But when you have it to a degree that you can't let go of it, that you defend it beyond what anyone else does, we need to look into you. Yeah. And we need to do these things.
I'm enjoying this conversation immensely, but I want to leave it with
okay.
A delusion to me stems from something broken in their brain. Okay, so the lady who had the belief that her husband was having an affair with early Alzheimer's disease, there's something, a circuit, a lesion, something, and science isn't good enough to identify that yet, but I think we'll get there one of these days, that identifies which area of the brain is not either being suppressed properly, which is probably what's going on, is that area of the brain, that circuit that has that belief evoking, is not suppressed all the way. So it's kind of like lack of inhibitory control is one way to think about it. And that lack of inhibitory control is allowing this false belief or in some cases hallucination to occur, misidentification belief. And I think that we need to attribute that to something broken in the brain. And I think that instinctively psychiatry knows that that's what's going on with schizophrenia, with Alzheimer's disease, with manic depressive patients who develop psychotic symptoms in either their depressive or their manic episodes. To me, that's very different than I read this thing online, and now, you know, the America is under attack by the liberals, and we need to go back, take America back from the communists, whatever they believe are communists, and to then arm themselves and go to the Capitol and carry out a violent insurrection and build a gallows and say that you want to hang the Vice President of the United States. That's very different. And I don't think that that's caused by a lesion in the brain, for instance, or a broken part of the brain anatomy. It might for a few of those individuals, a very small number, but the vast majority of them are charged by this desire and this spirited belief system that they relish, amplify, and defend. It becomes more binary, simplistic, and absolute that they need to act now. And they may have other psychological things going on. You know, if somebody is in a relationship and as a last resort, they're trying to maintain this relationship, but then it breaks off and they decide due to their immediate psychology in their world that attacking the U.S. Capitol is something that they're doing as a last resort in their life. Certainly there are psychological underpinnings to this that are beyond just their belief, absolutely. But as researchers, as doctors, as scientists, categorizing that differently than somebody who has a lesion in their brain is useful for us in research. It's useful for us forensically when we're examining somebody in our office or in a jail cell that's getting ready to be given the death penalty, for instance, or to be adjudicated as insane or as being an extremist. So we have different reasons why we need to embrace these three definitions. I've spelled them in my book. I loved what you said in your commentary. And I think, this is just my perception, I think you're arguing for what I'm arguing, but we're just thinking of them.
I think so too. I think we have same argument in different definitions. Look, we could do this for another 4 hours, but I want to thank you for coming on here. I really do appreciate it.
So the book comes out September 27, Extreme Overvalued Beliefs, Clinical and Forensic Dimensions. Great. Jeff Abigail, my name is Tahir Rahman. We co-authored the book. Very easy to read. It's a trade book. It's written for lay people, but I do think mental health and legal experts will enjoy understanding these concepts.
Great. Thank you very much.
Thank you for having me on the show. I really enjoyed it.
I know that, you know, it's morbid to think about this, but one of these things is going to happen again, and maybe we can have you on again to discuss it in the future.
We will learn how to thwart them. And the unfortunate part is we can't measure these things. So if we learn how to thwart these attacks, we can stop the school shootings. I do believe that. We can stop, you know, other mass shootings and assassinations and, you know, Lee Harvey Oswalds and John Hinckley Jr.'s of the world, which both of which I've written about in my book, entire chapter on Lee Harvey Oswald and the JFK assassination. Your listeners may really enjoy reading that. But if we learn about these, if we apply these tools that are now validated in the terrorism radicalization assessment protocol and other instruments that have been developed, if we teach Americans about this, if we adopt new definitions, new concise ways of thinking about this, if we adopt these, that's the way we stop these attacks. And that's the mission that we have here at WashU, is to work on how to do that.
Time for the mental health tip of the day.
Day full of hiccups, need a shake up, listen up. It's the Psych Effect Podcast Mental Health Tip of the Day.
All right. Your mental health tip of the day is brought to you by Still Nobody. But one day. Anyway, mental health tip of the day today is control. We just had a really long discussion about delusions and extreme overvalued beliefs. And we didn't really mention obsessions very much except at the beginning, but the obsessions are really important because different from delusions and extreme overvalued beliefs, obsessions are recurrent thoughts that are usually unwanted, and they can be problematic because they are involved a lot of times with people that overthink too much, and they're involved with people that feel like they lack control. And what I wanted to have this mental health tip for people today is to consider control. Consider what you can and can't control. What you can control are things that are within your scope of power. You know, what you physically can do, what you can move, what you can talk about. What you can't control is other people, what other people do, what other people say. And you need to remember that you can't do anything about that, and you have to kind of let go of those things. A lot of times also, people obsess and recurrently think over decisions that they have to make, and they feel like they have to have control over the decision because the decision has to be perfect. If I don't make this decision the right way, then things are going to go wrong. And what I'm here to tell you is that not every decision has to be perfect. Just make it and find out what happens after the decision is made. And then, you know, what you may find is you can alter the outcome of it maybe afterwards, because maybe the decision isn't perfect, but maybe there's a way to alter it or fix it in some way. So remember, there's no way that you can be perfect in every situation, and there's no way that you can control every situation, but it's okay. And if you learn that and remember that, you may find that anxiety, sadness, depression may feel a little bit less overwhelming for you. So that's your mental health tip of the day. Thank you to Dr. Tahir Rahman for coming on. Thanks for everybody for listening to this. This is really cool today. Remember, like, follow, subscribe, write written reviews in the comments section for Apple, Spotify, or any podcast app that you have. And I will see you in the next one.
The previous podcast is for general informational purposes only and represented the individual opinions of Dr. Dimitri Bick and his guests. It does not constitute the practice of medicine or other professional healthcare services and should not be taken as medical advice or an establishment of standard of care. No guarantee is given regarding the accuracy of any statements, and no doctor-patient relationship is formed. The content on this podcast is not intended to be a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Please consult your healthcare professional for any medical questions.